Good morning. I'm Diana Rabb. And I have the pleasure of speaking with Jerry Stahl today, the author of 8 books, his most recent one. And I was just telling him on the QT that I just love his book titles, but the new one that just came out is Happy Mutant Baby Pills. And I'd love to hear from Jerry how he came up with this title and how he feels about his new book. First, I will mention why I have chosen to speak to Jerry, as he had written the foreword for one of my books called Writers on the Edge, and I want to talk about that a little bit as well, because I love the way that he talks about the edge and how he really thinks that really being on the edge is kind of like a delusion, that we're all kind of, he doesn't really trust people that say that they're on the edge, because we're all kind of out there in a certain kind of way. So let's hear a little bit about your new book, Jerry, and your thoughts on it and the title. Are you there?
I am there. Hello?
Hi. I was just wondering if you want to share a little bit about the title of your new book and.
Right. Are you able to hear me now on your debut show? I can't tell.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
You cut out for a second into the void, but that's probably metaphorical and as it should be. The original title of my book, strangely enough, was Possible Side Effects, which turns out to have been the title of a really fantastic Augustine Burroughs book that I completely forgot about. So I, in about 3 seconds, came up with this new title. The same thing happened with Permanent Midnight. I had to come up with a title in a couple of seconds, and sometimes those are the best, you know, when the gun's to your head.
Mm-hmm. So basically you write the book and then work on the title afterwards.
Sometimes. I fatty, I had the title first. It's like Raymond Carver used to say, the story is the house and the title is the roof. So I would definitely subscribe to the Carver theory.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's really great. And speaking of edges, and I think you and I both have a big birthday coming up next year. So any special plans out there for you?
What kind of birthday are you talking about?
Oh, okay, never mind.
No. What are you? What do you mean? You mean like chronological birthday?
Yes, chronological.
They're all kind of big and they're all kind of irrelevant. Yeah, I turned 60 this year, actually.
Oh, this year. I guess Wikipedia was wrong then.
Yes, and on Google it also says I'm married to someone named Brandy Alexander. So, you know, I've yet to meet, and I'm not married to. So you really can't trust what you read online, that's for sure.
That's really scary, isn't it?
Some things. I do know that before I wrote this last HBO movie I did, Hemingway and Elmhorn, they had to go in and sort of try to clean up and sanitize my Wikipedia, which I guess was fairly heinous and graphic, because they were afraid. So who knows who pulled those strings. I don't know how to change it. Do you?
Yeah, well, not, the fear factor kind of, I actually like Wikipedia, and I kind of trust it for a lot of things. I know everything has to be referenced, so it's kind of curious. I haven't really found that many mistakes on Wikipedia, but now I just found one. No biggie.
Well, maybe I added a year accidentally. Usually I subscribe to the Tennessee Williams theory. You know, Tennessee Williams was kind of busted in an interview for lying about his age. And he said, well, I don't count the 3 years I worked in a shoe store. So I may just shave off the dope years and just, you know, turn back my odometer.
Yeah, well, that's all good. I mean, I figured since you had is it true that you have 2 daughters, right? And you have 1 very young daughter, is that correct?
Yes, for no apparent reason. I had another child, which happens. And now it's just a race to see if she's out of diapers before I'm in them.
If she what? I'm sorry?
If she's out of diapers before I'm in them.
Yeah, that's a good one. So speaking about truth and not fiction and nonfiction, there's so much talk about there, out there, about truth and, you know, the merging of fiction and nonfiction. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. Is it similar to Tim O'Brien, who says that it doesn't really freaking matter? It's all about story. What are your thoughts on that? Does the public really need to know all this truth?
About the author? No.
Yeah, about the author, about the story that you're writing, whether part of it was true or not.
No, I don't think they need to know any of it, but given the world we live in where people are more concerned with personalities and fame than anything else, you know, sadly, I think Tim O'Brien's ethos is almost, while beautiful and admirable, kind of idealistic and unreasonable in our age, because everybody wants to know the backstory, because, you know, you can read the capsule summation of an author's life in 2 minutes. It takes serious time to actually read a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what you're saying is you believe in sort of the division of fiction and nonfiction, as we used to see in the bookstores, the different sections. You believe in that?
Well, that is a deep philosophical question as to whether fiction, you know, I believe the opposite of what Picasso used. Picasso used to say, you know, art is the lie that reveals the truth. And I would say it's the other way around. But you can chew on that. In my case, I often get interviewed and they talk much more about me than they do my book, for better or worse. Not complaining. That's just how it's shaken down, which I guess is the fallout of starting off with the memoir, which in itself at some point starts to seem like fiction the farther you get from it.
Mm-hmm.
The truth
is
a moving, don't you think? The truth is sort of changes as you get some distance from it?
Yeah, pretty much. And I guess that brings up another point. You know, if you started with a memoir and then you had, about six or so novels after that, I guess the question comes up, how much, you know, is it important that the readers know, were there any nuggets of truth in your novels because you might have been classified as a memoirist?
Well, you know, you get classified as a lot of things because I think people, particularly reviewers and critics, feel a need to categorize. It is a fairly insane question on some level, how much of your book is true and how much of it is you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Naylor said every writer basically has one story that he tells over and over with different characters. So there might be some truth to that, but I don't know. I'm the author, so I'm always the last to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you're right about the stories over and over. I mean, don't you think that we all have life themes that we kind of are obsessed with or go back to all the time?
You might be right. It's never conscious. I don't plan these things out. It's just, you know, the theory of novel writing that I subscribe to is that it's like driving at night. You go about 20 feet, you can see in your headlights, and you go, you can see another 20 feet, and you go there, and then you see what's coming next, you know. I don't really plot it or plan it, but perhaps those themes just emerge from the cells.
Yeah, getting back to all, you know, all we've been told is to write about what we know or feel comfortable with. Have you ever gone and if you're writing, you know, out of the box, out of your comfort zone?
Well, I don't have a comfort zone, so that's easy for me. I don't know who ever said to write about what you know. I mean, what the hell do you know, really?
Yeah, and you don't know until you write it.
That's kind of true. I never know what I think until I write it.
Yeah.
And then I scare the shit out of myself.
So what are you working on now, Jerry?
I'm working on another novel and also working with the director, Larry Charles. I'm trying to adapt one of my last novels, Painkillers, into a possible cable TV show. And surviving would be
That's great.
The main. Yeah, just, you know, it's sort of like a gerbil who has to gnaw on something or else its teeth grow through the bottom of its jaw. You know, you just keep fighting. Some of it works out, some of it doesn't.
Yeah.
Do you write full time or do you have a day job?
No, I write full time and I do some teaching, you know, some writing for healing is what I do a lot of, whether it's
writing for healing mean?
Writing for healing means probably what you and I do and what most writers do. It's, you know, we write, and T.C. Boyle, I know, there's an interview of him on Rumpus yesterday, and, you know, just about writing to prevent yourself from going to the bad places, perhaps, and just kind of healing over, you know, I think basically the idea that writers write because they have to write, not necessarily they want to write, and it's kind of like the gnawing gerbil. It's just like we need to do it just to kind of keep our sanity. So that, in that sense, it's healing, and it feels good. If we don't do it, then we just feel like there's something missing in our life, if you will. You know, I taught that, I think I missed you at the West Hollywood Book Festival, but I taught a workshop on confessional writing, and it was very interesting how many people came out there and said, I've got so many secrets I need to tell, it's hurting me. So I kind of help people like that just let loose. The fear factor is really huge. I don't think you've got that fear factor, which is why you're such a great writer. You're just like, who cares? Here's my story. Here's what I want to tell, right?
I think I was very lucky in that a lot of the worst shit that can ever happen to people already happened to me and happened many years ago. So a lot of the things people are afraid of, such as exposure, or shaming, or looking like an idiot, or a freak, or a thief, or, you know, choose your noun. I can't sweat because it already happened. So, you know, I could have spent the rest of my life fronting like I was an upright, normal citizen, or I could have just written it down. And so I did the latter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that writing is healing necessarily. I love that works for Mr. Boyle. That's great. But I find writing can make, you know, you write to get the voices out of your head, and then you find other voices behind those, in my experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you feel a certain – sorry, go ahead.
Please, you.
No, I was going to say, but don't you feel – you get the voices out of your head, but isn't that kind of like a little bit of a – maybe the word healing is just too, you know, medicinal. Maybe we should use the word transformative. There must be some reason that you're driven to the page.
Absolutely true. And I suppose, unlike you, I don't think about writing that much. I just try to get out of the way and do it. But I am definitely crazier and harder to be around when I don't write. So I think by default that would prove your theory that it is healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's transformative so much as you become more of what you really are, which can be a good or a bad thing depending on the day.
So do you think that goes with your comment in the preface that you wrote for me about, addictions? Do you think that writing could possibly be an addiction?
Addiction's a pretty loaded word. I mean, we're addicted to breathing oxygen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think humans are just wired to compulsion. But if it is, then I'm certainly happy to have it. God knows I've had worse ones.
So you've lived in a lot of places. Now, is that true? They said that on Wikipedia. Is that true?
I didn't read my Wikipedia page, so you're going to have to tell me where I live.
Wow, you've lived in Philadelphia. You went to a prep school in Philadelphia. Is that right?
No, not true.
Oh, interesting. You're Jerry Stahl, right?
According to me...
Okay.
I went to a prep school in Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia is in Pennsylvania for 2 years after my father kind of checked himself out of the scene. I got sent away. Things were a little crazy. But not Philadelphia. I hate to disillusion you about Wikipedia. I feel bad now.
All right. Well, so what about Columbia? Did you go to Columbia?
They're right about Columbia. I did go there, yes.
Okay, and then you traveled to Greece.
Boy, that Wikipedia doesn't leave any stone unturned. I did travel to Greece, lived there for a little while, lived here and there.
Okay, because there's references on that one. Anyway, this is pretty funny. So, yeah, you might want
to
check.
Yeah, I have to look at my Wikipedia. They have references. They
yes,
went to Greece
actually, you have
to
have. Yeah,
wow.
Whoever posted it, I don't know who did it, but probably a bunch of different people, they have to reference it because that's the only way they'll post it. Otherwise, they'll say unreferenced sources.
I see. Does it reference that I'm married to Brandy Alexander?
No, this one says Elizabeth Stahl.
Oh, well, that's been updated then. Who does this? Who are these little gremlins?
Someone who has nothing better to do. A stalker, perhaps.
Oh, don't even get me started on that.
Yeah, actually, that's funny because a friend of mine called me the other day, and he was all panicked. He's a pretty well-known router. He said, I'm being stalked. And I said, and what would you like me to do? He said, tell me how to get rid of her. And I said, I have no idea. Just don't answer emails. But I have to. I said, well, you don't have to. Just, you know. So it sounds like you might have been stalked, too. Maybe you have some advice.
Well, I don't know why he feels compelled to answer emails from someone who's stalking him, but, you know, good for him.
Yeah.
He's going to have a lot of stalkies or stalkers.
I think it's, might be a subject for a new story for him, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, it could be. You know, it keeps you busy, fending off the stalkers, you know. I find that a lot of stalker-type people really don't know they're stalking. They just feel that you're meant to be together.
Mm.
Or it's somebody who thinks your work is somehow so offensive, they feel the need to auto-correct you.
Mm.
I mean, I've heard it all. I've had threats and letters and crazy people showing up, but that could be just the nature of my audience. I could just be lucky.
Yeah. Have you ever followed up on any of them?
What do you mean followed up?
Met any of them for a discussion?
Well, people show up and start screaming. I don't know if that counts as a discussion, but yeah, I've met some of them. It's not a huge problem. I mean, it's not. I'm not on that level of fame where people are coming out, but there are a few.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you have people tagging along after you?
Well, there's always people that write occasional emails, and I haven't gotten any nasty ones, actually. But I think maybe one that just didn't like one of my articles or something, disagreed with me, wanted to get in a discussion, but nothing more than that, nothing offensive. But, of course, I'm not in the same terrain as you. I think you in such a wonderful way, push the envelope, and I think that's great. So you expose yourself, like you say, to different kinds of audiences. But I always find it amusing hearing from, our readers, because we sit in our offices and we don't talk to anybody. So it's just nice. And once in a while, even if it's bad, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying. How do people get your email, though?
Oh, well, unfortunately, you can get me through my website.
Oh, I see. Well, that's good. There's a little barrier there. I thought maybe you'd have a separate email for that.
No, maybe I should. No, I mean, they would have to go through my website, and then I write back with my email address, which probably is a mistake. I should probably set up another email, especially with a book like Lust coming out. Who knows what kind of emails I'm going to get.
Yeah, you might want to just set up a separate email, and then your next book could be about who got in touch with you.
It could be what? I'm sorry?
Your next book could be about, the people who got in touch with you, and then you can just make your living as a blackmailer.
Thanks for setting me on my life path.
Well, sometimes you stumble on a way.
I haven't thought about my next project. Maybe this will help me along. I mean, other than reading, poems in lingerie stores.
There's probably much to be gained from that. But, any career advice I can offer, please, happy to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's always good to step over the edge there, and probably do better in men's lingerie stores if there is such a thing.
So that's where you read your poems in stores?
Well, no, but I have not yet. I mean, I've read at bookstores, obviously, like all of us, but because this book is going to be, you know, it's called Lust.
Yes. Well, that could open up the whole, you know, maybe you could have, you could start your own line. you could call it Poems and Panties, and you could just have a twofer.
Oh, I see you like alliterations, huh?
Well, this case, it's kind of inevitable, but yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that. I'll have to, Poems and Panties, patented by Jerry Stahl.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Go ahead.
I said I'll blurb them both.
Okay, sounds great. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, now you've got me stumped. I don't know what else to talk about. Anything else that you want to share with the audience?
A talk show host, that's probably verboten to say that. Or
I know,
edit.
Was it? Well, I didn't expect to go into Poems for Panties, so...
Well, I mean, I used to.
How
whatever.
About we divert to... Okay, how about the whole idea of your, you know, a lot of your books going into films and... And are you involved a lot in the writing of those, or are you sort of passing
well,
on?
It only happened once that a book of mine got made into a film. I did not write the movie, though I was given a chance with the star. Ben Stiller and I worked a lot on the screenplay together, but we did not initially write the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I don't have screen credit or anything, so I'm basically a different kind of asshole in the movie than I am in the book. It wasn't real life.
Oh, that's right, Ben Stiller, right? He's amazing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that was the only book I had made into a movie. I've had most of them was an option, but somehow they never got there. Johnny
yeah,
Depp of I Fatty.
But,
Depp is not planning to do anything with I Fatty, so it's just sort of sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Stiller just optioned having you in Baby Pills last week, so you never know.
Yeah. That's great. Were you into, were you ever into the Mutant Turtles? Well, you're probably beyond that. Was your daughter into it, your oldest daughter?
Mutant Ninja Turtles. I managed to miss those. I think that was back in the era when I was stealing TV as opposed to watching them, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
I missed a decade or so of popular culture.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. So anything you want to add about your book, about turning 60, about life in general?
Well, it is, you know, I am occasionally embarrassed to still be alive. I certainly didn't expect to, but definitely weird shit happens when you don't die young.
Yeah. Well, 60 is the new 40, isn't it?
What's that?
60 is the new 40.
I don't believe that would ever be true, but I guess 60-year-old people will go around saying that.
Mm-hmm.
That would mean 20 is the new newborn.
They are kind of born with, you know, iPads in their hand, aren't they?
You could be right. These days they are, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, I've been very lucky, and, you know, I've stumbled into what I always ran away from, which is the straight life, you know. For me, like, you know, square is the last frontier. So now I have, you know, a beautiful wife and a baby and a house and a mortgage. And, you know, it's much more intense than shoplifting and stealing and living in the street, which is something I used to know how to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's given you a lot to write about, and it's given you a certain perspective. Does your eldest daughter write at all?
Yeah, she's actually working on a book called Am I a Bad Conversationalist, Stella Stahl. She's a fantastic writer. I saw her do a reading a couple weeks ago in Los Angeles and was just blown away. Though, of course, now that I'm the subject, young essay, satiric essay, writing child, is no longer a child. And now I'm on the receiving end, so it's kind of brutal and beautiful at the same time.
Wow, you must be very proud.
Listen, I would have, you know, chariots descending from the sky and smacking me in the face if I took any credit for the fact that she turned out great, but she amazingly did.
Yeah, sometimes the genetic pool just does what it's supposed to do, doesn't it?
That's the scariest thing I've ever heard, but you might be right.
Oh, I'm sure that you read to her a lot as a child, did you, when you had time?
Yeah, well, you know, the marriage split up when she was two, and I was, I had some time-consuming hobbies, but I managed to be there most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had the privilege of being the daughter of a celebrity junkie dad, which just had to be busloads of fun for her. When we went to PTA meetings, and people would just sort of clear the row when I sat down, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
But you
now
know what Hemingway says, Hemingway said the best gift for an artist is an unhappy childhood. So, you know, I might have helped her out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So does she write full-time now?
No. No, she has a day job, of course. She's trying to be an actress. She also writes and holds down a job because that's the world we live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, your first book came out, Permanent Midnight, was 95, so that was your first book, right?
Well, I wrote six novels that didn't get published before that, the first chapters of which would appear in Playboy or literary magazines or the here and there, Pushcart Prize anthology or something, but that was the first one that ever made it out of the box.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that is? Was it's probably one of the first of its kind at that time.
It was just when they were getting trendy. For some reason, the publisher held it for a year, so by the time it came out, it probably looked derivative, but such is life, the mysterious
mm-hmm.
of the publishing business.
Yeah. So have you worked always with the same publisher?
No, I do not. I've
mm-hmm.
had many different publishers.
But you have an agent, I imagine?
I do not have an agent at this point.
So you do all the work yourself. That's a lot of work.
It hasn't been that much work. It's kind of a new development. My last book was before Happy Mutant Baby Pills was published by the great Tyson Cornell at Pickle Books. And this one was published by HarperCollins. And we'll see what the next one is.
Yeah.
It's always a surprise.
Always a surprise. All right. Well, it was great chatting with you. They're supposed to ring us a bell, but they've not rang the bell yet. So, hello. Is anybody listening to us? Does anybody care?
All right. Well, it was great talking to you. I got to jump. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Thank you. It was great, great talking to you as well. And when I get a copy of Lust, which is coming out for Valentine's Day in February, I'll make sure to get you a copy.
I look forward to it. Take care of yourself. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Jerry. Bye-bye.
Left you on a debris at the Sunday morning market. You were starting through the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. And that old familiar love song. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. I went there and back. at the depot. With the General Workers Union. And yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight and they're not working. Left you on the debris. Now we both know you got the money. And I wonder what you would have done without me.